Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Oh, thank you, you golden-throated thrush, you. Dave Solomon, I love you so much. I love everybody today, as a matter of fact. What is wrong with me? Somebody needs to slap me because I feel so doggone good. And one of the reasons why, ladies and gentlemen, is because of this man here. Now, you know, I've been doing radio since dirt, as my son would say, a long time, and there are favorite guests along the way. Well, since Hybrid Jazz has been doing its thing since 2011, this sincerely has been one of my favorite guests. Second time around, he is an award-winning guitarist, thank you very much. He is an author, he is a teacher, and he is considered, and I don't care what he says, and I'm just going to bop him if he says anything in return to me, he is a bona fide legend. Ladies and gentlemen, Carl Filipiak.
Hey, good afternoon. Good to hear
you. Good afternoon.
And yeah, that's fantastic. Great to hear you. Great to hear you. Great to be here. And I'm going to leave all my comments about what you just said alone. I'm going to just go right to it. Thank you for them, and let's move on.
Just sit there and take it, Carl, okay?
I will. Okay. You know, I'm always going to say, where's all my money?
I should have learned to do what you've done a long time ago. I should have learned that, but no, let's get Trish to do it for free.
And I hope nobody takes that seriously. Here's my quick disclaimer. Believe me, if there's one thing you don't want to be into, it's what I'm into if it's for money. Money's not why you play the kind of music I play. So let me throw my disclaimer in there. I was just joking about where's all my money.
And, Carl, let's get right to the chase here, because there's a couple of pivotal questions I want to ask you about your music, because it can be classified as your music. I'm looking at the cover of Carl Filipiak and the Jimmy Jazz Band live at the Cat's Eye. I'm reading the notes by the wonderful Mr. Himes here, and is it really true that when you are of a certain age, you and I are approximately the same age, although I'm a year or so older than you, but when you were listening to the Beatles and falling in love, and you were also listening to Miles Davis, were you consciously thinking of, geez, I love these two acts so much, I wonder if there's a way for me to bridge what I'm trying to convey with my music, and then
no,
Jimi Hendrix.
No. That wasn't on my mind. I'm just telling you the truth. It would be really, really hip for me to say that, and everybody wouldn't. No one would believe me anyway. But no, of course not, because I was still, in that world of collecting information, you know. Beyond enjoying and just loving the music, which is really what it's all about, I was really collecting all the information from two forms of music that probably I really haven't. I mean, I was aware that one was jazz and one was rock, but to me and to this day, they're all the same. It's just great music. Great blues is great. It's equal to jazz. It's equal to classical music. It's, you know, equal to great rock and pop. I think that it was obviously Miles who was the one that put that into motion, and why we love him and why I love him, and you know, the need for change. And say what you will, I know there's a lot of quote unquote, you know, people that really like jazz of a certain period that aren't into what Miles did, and I think it's wonderful. I think it's the way you have to go. I think he needed to resonate with that moment, that time period. And he's the one who really showed the way. You know, these are all, the liner notes and me talking are really kind of afterthoughts.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at and when I describe what I've been through, I'm looking at it, you know, from the rear view mirror, so to speak. So it's pretty easy for me to say, oh, yeah, Hendrix and the Beatles – you know what I mean, and the bridge between that and jazz and Miles. But nah, man, all that credit goes to Miles Davis, who really put those two elements together, or tried, for whatever you want to call it. So, and then that's another discussion we could be here for an hour talking about. Just what is that music, you know, fusion, what does it mean? How has the terminology changed? And but it wouldn't be a very exciting show, would it? Be kind of boring,
absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely. No,
yeah, maybe to some people, but I hope I've answered your question. No, I didn't have that kind of vision. I just love those music, and I think it was inevitable, you know, for me to see other people do it, and to, I think in a way, you know, you figure out your own way to, that just sounds so, like, you know, artsy, you know, to express yourself. Yeah, you know, but that's really what you're doing. I'm just really playing this. What do you want to call it? What's the word I'm looking for? A lack of a word. Go figure. This composite of all the things I love, and then you can go and you can call it what you want to. That's basically it. So in a weird way, my music is kind of, I think, difficult. Could be difficult to classify in one respect, because you go, well, it's kind of jazz, and then you go, well, it's kind of rock, you know, and it depends on, you know, how far to the side the song goes. And then, to be honest, at some point I just go, well, I really don't care. It's what I do. It's what I like, and you can call it what you want to.
Well, it can be absolutely exhausting, because, you know, people insist on the categories or the subcategories for what you do. And, you know, Carl, we've had some people on the show who have made a very intelligent point in that we need to classify often, because we need to have some direction so as to know what to expect. But you said something that is really important, which is that you were thinking, you know, I'm looking at this beautiful artwork, and of course we're going to get to that subject too.
Robert McClintock, yeah. We have to talk about him for a moment.
That is beautiful. But you said rear view mirror. You're looking now at what was going through your head when you were trying to figure out what it was that turned you on about playing music in front of people or in the studio. So you did answer that very well, and I appreciate that.
Okay. Cool.
And Jeff Himes has a way of writing in such a way, you know, he made you seem like Don Quixote, which is wonderful.
I paid him well for that.
I love that. Oh,
just
my
kidding.
God, it's like...
Just kidding, Jeffrey. Just kidding. No, I love Jeffrey Himes, and you're right. So much about that record is so much, you know, it was like an unwittingly, it's my Baltimore album. It's so Baltimore centric, for lack of a better word. You know,
yeah.
Jeffrey Himes did the liner notes. Robert McClintock is an artist in Baltimore that I hope that people become even more aware of. And, you know, all the guys, you know, from the Cat's Eye. I mean, how Baltimore does it get? You know, turn the Cat's Eye to me. It's not like I really turned it into anything, but. Here we go again. I'm losing the phrase here. For lack of a better word, I utilized the Cat's Eye to do what I really love, which, if you think about it, you may not think that what I do there would work, and it's amazing. I've been there 12 years now.
Yeah.
And it just works so good. I love that place. And most people that haven't been there are not hip to it. And I got it. It is a bar, and it's a joint, and then Fell's Point and all that, but it really is more than that to me, and you couldn't pay me to leave that place.
Carl, Phil's Point, if people don't understand when they're listening to the show live or in archives later on, Phil's Point has such rich history because, honest to God, you can go in different places in Phil's Point, maybe even the Cat's Eye, and experience ghosts. Because there was a lot of those pirate ships that came to the port there at Fell's Point, and a lot of people, there are even ghost tours of Fell's Point that you can participate in. This place is so cool. And then, you know, just across the street, you've got the primary place, where that great show, Homicide, took part, TV show, that everybody knows and loves, who is cool and is hip to TV. My God, Cat's Eye is one of those places. I don't think that there are a lot of places that are worthier for you, because you and Cat's Eye lend to each other something really special. Every time you play there, it is completely spilling out into the street because people want to hear you play. You are aware of that.
It's a great place. Yeah, I am, and I'm grateful and all that, and yeah, I just count my blessings. I'm grateful to have it because, okay, and thank you. That's a thank you to Tony Cushing and Anna Marie, you know, who have allowed me to do what I want there. That's very valuable to me, and I appreciate it. And at the same time, it actually even has more value when you think that there's not a lot of places for me to hang, you know, hang these songs or notes on. Not a lot of places to really play, which there's another show, you know. Why aren't there more places to play this kind of music?
Oh, honey, yes.
I'm sure you've
Are
had
you
to
kidding?
Hear that. I guess that I would ask you now, you know, what have you heard about whatever the state of, you know, jazz or original music is in Baltimore?
Well, to be just succinct about it this time around, there needs to be those managers or owners, I'm sorry, managers, and more importantly, owners, who get the notion that once a jazz venue is established, they need to understand that money has to be put in it for the long run. Carl, how many times have we seen these short-lived clubs or restaurants who are playing jazz, and they thought that all of a sudden it was going to turn into a gold mine overnight? It has to be grown. I think the state of jazz is great, but this is another show as well. In order to populate those clubs that are going to play jazz, if you're going to play jazz, you need to play jazz. You can come into any club and play whatever you do because you are so firmly established, and there will always be people who will want to see you. But you've got to be able to hear on the radio somehow the artist that you're going to pay money to see live. Don't you think that's true?
Yes. Yes, and there's a love, and not to look, I've got it. I'm doing well in Baltimore, you know, despite some of the obstacles, and I'm really not. It's not that I'm. It's not so much of an obstacle in the sense that you know, someone is closing a door on me. But while there are places to play, even in my own backyard where I live, the kind of music they want to hear is just not the kind of music I play. So I'm not trying to view that as like, a closed door. You know, it's really closed from me. I don't want to play the music that you have to do to play, you know, certain places. So that's been my choice. But to say, you know, the real truth is, despite all the nice accolades and the nice, you know, comments I get from people that do love what I do and I extremely appreciate, believe me, it isn't an open door. It isn't, because you were back to not fitting in the certain box that people want to put you in. So here we go again. We're back to yet another show. So we got three or four shows lined up now.
Well, we really could. Here's the thing. Because you're from Baltimore, there are people in Baltimore who have a certain perspective. Maybe because I'm from Philadelphia and I still perceive myself to be on the outside looking in, I can have a different view of things. And I don't necessarily care who takes offense at this. Carl, you should not worry about what anybody in Baltimore has to say about your music, because you have risen above the common yokels who want to get their music established and have not as of this date. You have made it a point where you have become a teacher, you have become an author, You have utilized every single talent that you have, not only to benefit you, we go back to the money thing, but other people as well. So I hope that you don't ever get sensitive about what people in this area have to say
about
you.
And I actually don't. I don't think you can do what I do and worry about or second guess what people are going to think or say. But to say, I think I was just bringing up that I'm aware of, that there are certain, venues or whatever organizations that you're just not going to fit into their concept of what jazz should or shouldn't be. That's merely what I was saying. I'm certainly not worried about it. I'm not going to change. I kind of just wish that door was a little more open to other things, more creative music and all that. And that's really what I was saying.
And guess what? That's why they fail, because they don't open their pocketbooks, they don't open their ears, and they don't open up their narrow vision of what is supposed to be happening for 2013.
You know what I mean? You know what? That's like kind of like I'm doing well here. I'm not complaining at all. I would just like to have a couple more gigs. It's pretty much it. Get me a gig. I like to play. Just a couple more gigs where I can play the music that I truly love. But you know what? Baltimore, ironically, the stuff, even though it may sound like I am a negative comment, it really isn't. I'm aware of the fact that Baltimore forces you in a good way to become independent of all that. And it's taught me how to just do what I do and to keep on going and to stay on my own path. So in that respect, it's kind of like that double-edged sword. I may be here going, I wish I had a couple more gigs, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think I'd be who I am if the situation was any different. So I'm not sure what I just said just then.
No, I'm taking it all in. And part of that
and why I'm not complaining about it is because, and I'm sorry, I'm segueing into Greg, who's going to come up soon, Greg Tompkins. Greg Tompkins is responsible for the past couple of years really turning my life around, because probably for 7 years I was in drop back and punt mode. And I can't wait to talk to Greg for a minute when he comes on. And Greg is like one of the best sax players in Baltimore, and
yes,
extremely creative musician. And he's the one that got me out and playing with Lafayette Gilchrist. There's another bright light, one of the few. Lafayette is probably one of the few people that's really doing anything that's truly different and innovative. And I'm a member of that band. You have no idea how proud I am to be, in that band, the Lafayette Gilchrist and the New Volcanoes. Please check out all his CDs.
Oh, yeah.
And Greg has a really cool little kind of, I guess, an offshoot of that with Robert Shahid and Amy Shook and Greg and Lafayette. And he's going to tell you, and it's more of a straight-ahead jazz thing. So I am getting to play everything I want, even though it's not in my name. That's the beautiful part about it. It's like, man, why didn't I like reach out and start playing with other people sooner? And I understand why. I can answer my own question, because I had my own group, and after a while, people don't ask you to play because they think you got your own thing. So Greg is responsible for breaking that. And why you're here, and how happy you were this morning, now I'm happy like that too. I got it. I'm doing everything I love. I'm playing with Lafayette. I'm playing with Greg. I got my own band. Yeah, not too much left.
Well, and what you have just said presents a couple of different questions, but I really want to get to a track. Of course, I had intentions of playing two while we were together, and then I'm going to play another track later on. I've got pretty specific tracks picked out. And, of course, I didn't pick the longer tracks, Carl. I just want people to know, though, that this new CD, Carl Filipiak and the Jimmy Jazz Band Live at the Cat's Eye, features, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most outstanding takes you will ever hear of I Want You, She's So Heavy.
I'm glad you liked it.
Mercy. I took off all my clothes and ran through the house screaming when I heard it. Let me tell you something.
And there's the fourth show.
Right. There you go. But
I'm not going anywhere near that.
Carl, it's the truth. My poor son does not know what's wrong with me half the time when I hear some of this music, but he's probably listening right now at work today at CCBC because he wanted to hear you specifically.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's nice. That's awesome.
To hear you because he knows what mom is going to play. Listen, I want to play it's a choice between two. I Got Your Mantra and Walkin' Tall.
Uh-huh. We play with whichever one you want. Are you asking me or?
Yeah, I'm sort of throwing it out there because I'm familiar with both of those songs, and I am very curious about Walkin' Tall.
Well, what are you curious about? The title or the song or both?
Yes, like how you arrived at this title because I am very familiar with the language there.
Playing music and teaching, and I'm sure it's not the only profession that does that, but teaching really brings you to, you know, meeting all kinds of people, and that's one of the beautiful things about it. And I've had one or two of my students that were Native American Indians, and without going into detail, listening to their stories was very moving. And one of the words I picked up, which is Wankatanka, which means the Great Spirit. It may be another word, I guess, for, you know, God or whatever. And
yep.
I just liked it. You know, the Great Spirit just sounded cool. And the song has that Hendrix-y kind of vibe in the beginning. So maybe we'll play that song.
Yes.
If you like, had that Hendrix-y kind of vibe. And you know, there's, you know, how you make things. You know, once again, we're looking back. You know, Hendrix was part Indian. You know, it just kind of fit the song.
Yeah.
And that was my way of, I guess, saying, you know, thank you for the experience of meeting you to those former students.
That's really cool because I learned that when I was involved with a Sioux community back in the Philadelphia region, and they were in Harrisburg. So I really like that, and it makes sense. And especially now since you've mentioned what we've talked a little bit about Jimi Hendrix, you know the anniversary of his death in 1970 was yesterday.
Yes, that's fine. That's one of those moments where I know exactly where I was, and I happened to be in New York and see it on the Fillmore East. I was a young man, and I think it was my first trip to New York, and wound up, you know, walking around, and there you're seeing the Fillmore East, and there's a famous shot of that, which, you know, has, you know, Hendrix's birth date and, you know, died, you know, whatever, and I was like, it's unbelievable. Hendrix was very important to me. I saw Hendrix live. I think we may have gone over this maybe in the last show, but yeah, that Hendrix meant a lot to me. That was one of the most spiritual things I've seen musically.
Oh, my God,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome to see that. Just incredible.
And not only, you know, guys had a certain kind of reaction to Jimi Hendrix, but I remember, and you do too, Carl, how young girls responded to him because he was this wild gypsy-like character who was absolutely free in his movements and playing. We had not seen that kind of, you know, he was this African-American, wild, crazy, beautiful, oh my God. And girls at Bishop McDevitt High School, we were like falling over each other.
Well, I think he kind of did transcend the whole thing, and it's funny, I, you know, only until we bring it up, and I'm grateful for this view of the world, only until you bring it up do I think that Hendrix was black, let alone, or half black, half Indian, who cares, you know what I mean? And that's what I love about it, that I didn't care what color he was. And I don't. I'm not sure if that's real. I'm not sure if that was a conscious thing with the that generation that loved him.
Oh,
it wasn't
oh my
like.
God.
Think about it. Is it really? Man, I dig Hendrix. He's black. You just go, man, I dig Hendrix.
Oh no! Listen,
I think that he transcended. He was one of the first to transcend that whole, that racial barrier. Because you know, one of the first guys in, and really, there's the irony there. If when you say he's one of the first prominent guys in rock and roll, you go, well, wait a minute, what happened in the 50s with Chuck Berry? And I'm not sure if, while Chuck Berry's an icon, whether I think it would be safe to say that he didn't arrive at a height that Hendrix achieved. I mean, Hendrix is iconic, you know, in every aspect. But yeah, I loved Hendrix. Yeah, maybe not for the same reason girls did.
Actually, that time, because, you know, here's 1968, April the 4th, 1968, Dr. King was assassinated, and Jimi Hendrix came out, what, 67 or so. So I will say this, Carl. I will say it is because, and people have to take this the absolute right way, because anybody who knows me knows my heart. It was because he was black and a rock star and so free and fearless. It was because of that people stood back. If he had been white, wouldn't have been the same. But because we needed to have a hero in rock that we could relate to, although we didn't think we ever could. The white kids who were listening to him, oh, my God, he was so bloody important. I can't even tell you. But you
very
know.
Interesting. I love this. I love the conversation. It's deep. I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Well, let's play Walk and Tonka, because I want folks to understand the depths of you, because you're a pretty deep guy, Carl Filipiak.
I hope my wife's listening in. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that, too. Live at the Cat's Eye is the new project. Check this out on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Yeah.
Cool, thanks. I haven't listened to that for a while. Cool. Thank
oh, my
you.
Gosh. Paul Hanna. How about him on
Paul
saxophone?
Paul Hanna, fantastic. I love Paul. Great.
My God. Carl, listen, let me tell you something. Griselda is in the chat room. She's in Texas, and she's active in the music biz, too. She is jumping out of her skin listening to you.
Oh, that's awesome. Tara said thank you very much. It's awesome. Let me mention Matthew Everhart on the bass.
Yep.
The newest guy in the band, fantastic bass player. Other bass players that played on a record are my good friend Steve Zerlin, who's on a track or two, and Mike Pope, who I'm sure you've heard of, is played with Chick Corea's Electric Band, David Sanborn, Al Dimeola, and many others. And my best friend and the guy that really is responsible for putting this helping me get this record out is the drummer Frank Young, and without him none of this would have happened. So thank you to Frank. Well, let's see. Okay, we have some time left. It's funny how things happen when you look back on them. They almost feel like I would have never thought that this would have ever come out because of the events that preceded it. So it was a real lesson for me in trying to find, once again, that eternal quest of trying to find what good you can find out of all situations. And believe me, it's not that I can do it. It just happened this way. So I've been at the Cat's Eye for 10 years, right? 12 years, whatever. Every gig is fantastic. Yeah, and I know sometimes we play songs that fall apart or whatever, but I'm not judging it by that. I'm just judging it by the spirit of the band and the place. It's awesome. And of course, after the years go by, you go, let's do a live record. And it's amazing. So you're there for 10 years and you do a record, and the night you're paying whatever, $500 for somebody to record you and $500 for somebody to film you. I know, shout out to Jeff Eline, who was there videotaping that night. Jeff is another great guy from Baltimore. It's helped me out immensely. Talk about him later. For some reason, one of the speakers was unplugged, and it was just such a minor drag. Like, we're going, what is wrong? And it kind of vibed the whole thing out. So I scrapped the night, and I'm going, we'll do it again. I'm thinking, well, it can't happen twice. Right before we play, somebody accidentally drops a glass of water into the PA system.
Oh,
and it's like,
no!
Yes. So the back end of this album that is really done well, is like really got off to a bad start. It got off to being invisible. Because I didn't want to hear it. I was actually, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I was actually very upset, which is not saying a whole lot for me, but I was very upset, and I actually didn't ever want to hear it. And Frank Young, God bless him, insisted on checking out the tapes. I said, knock yourself out. I'm going, because I'm never listening to him. I have too much of a bad vibe of the whole night. I was playing, and I was like, I don't know if I can say it on the air how I felt. So, make a long story short, months go by, and I'm just rejecting. I'm going, I don't want to hear it. Finally, I said, cool, make a CD of stuff. He said, you know what? He said, there's a couple songs on here that I don't know how it happened. He said, but kind of caught a little bit of magic in a bottle, so to speak. Let's check it out. I guess enough time went by that I was starting to be open to it. I listened to it, and I'm going, great. And then the only problem was there wasn't enough material because it was so little that got off the ground because of those events that we went in and recorded a third night. And we made sure that we went in on like an off night where the logistics were much better. It was really tough recording there on a Saturday night in between another band playing. I don't know if the people that have been there know. It's a tiny club and there's another band playing before you, and we're kind of asking for trouble in a way. But, man, am I glad. And it winds up being a record that got me out of not putting out a record for so long, and it was probably financially the most inexpensive record I did. And
awesome.
I had no expectations, which is really cool, because you're really at that place where you can't lose when you have no, when you're totally detached from the outcome. And I haven't even advertised it or promoted it yet. And I think anybody's gone to my website, at least those few weeks when it first came out, it reached, you know, number one on Amazon in jazz fusion and jazz bebop. So
it's been
wonderful. It's been awesome. And believe me, so I'm looking at a record that I'm ready to go, I never want to hear this. And it's probably going to be the hippest record I put out. So what a great story.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, for me, it's a good story. I don't know if it's boring to anyone else, but for me, it's really cool.
We definitely need to think,
so I think that's interesting.
Frank. Oh, yes.
Oh, of course. And I think I just did. But, hey, Frank, if you're listening, thank you again. You know what Frank's going to say? Don't tell me you love me. Give me some money.
Well, here's the thing. He knows you well enough, as do people who have any sort of respect for you. And there's so many of us, we can't even count. But here's the thing. Carl Filipiak, you are so good at what you do. You're so in tune with that instrument. You've been playing for so long, and you love it so much that it's just taken for granted that you're not only going to be good when people see you, you're going to be great. And you get on yourself because you have it in your head that something is maybe not up to par, but the rest of us are going, oh, my God, I'm bowing. Why am I bowing? This is possibly the greatest guitarist we've ever seen. That's what you do. You know, you probably get on yourself. You're welcome.
Yeah, and yes, I could listen to you talk forever.
I'll pay you.
I think you need that. The moment you really, if you even ever come close to thinking, yeah, I got this down, that means you don't.
Yes.
So you always want to be in that state of, you know, I don't want to be neurotic about it, but yeah, I do want to be critical about it and have an element of maybe not making it. And that's the catch, because you don't want it ruining, you know, your happiness in life. The balance is living up to, you know, your potential without living your life by it. Because many times I can go home from a gig and go and allow myself, if I wanted to be, you know, let it linger throughout the rest of the next day because I didn't play well. Or, you know what I mean, for some reason. And that's when it gets silly, and I'm hoping that I'm getting better at that, you know. I shrug it off. Song fall apart,
well,
if I don't play great on it, hey, you know, I'll try it next time. That's cool. I'm not going to live my life by that. So I got you where maybe people don't hear it, but I can't be them. I can only be me, so I can only judge by me. So that's nice that people think that. Whatever, I've had my moments. You know, I'm a human being. I've had some bad moments just like everybody. So I don't want to act like I'm accepting that, like, oh, yeah, I'm always on and it's always art and great. I'm sorry to disagree, but it is not. In a perfect world, it would be.
Well, and here's what separates.
And I'm not saying this just to be disagreeable. I'm just I'm just letting you know what I think is the truth of it. And I know that you're speaking from the truth also, and I'm looking at it from the other side.
Well, see, you're a teacher, too. So, you know, you have had so many students, and you, of course, because it's the nature of things, you're someone who's instructing a student how to play a certain way. And I would imagine that sometimes that teacher part carries with you on stage and you go, I shouldn't have hit that note. I shouldn't have done it. Why wasn't I paying attention? Or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get
Of course. We're all guilty of that. I think the greatest players are guilty of that, or the ones that would be up to really, you know, that have some kind of some slight self-awareness. I tell most of my students, I'll say, you know, I know just about everything there is about playing guitar great. I just don't do it. And you know, there's a certain element that's funny and yet it isn't.
Yes,
and it is true. I know. I do know that. I'm not bragging here, but I do know. I spent my life looking at guitar and studying guitar, so I know a lot about guitar. But even I've had some of my students, even at some of my sessions, which is interesting, while I'll play stuff, and they'll go, "How come you don't do this or that kind of playing when I hear you play live?"
Oh.
And they're not being negative. They're just aware of, like, you know, that there's stuff that I'll do in the basement, and then now we're getting into the deep end of improvisation, where one of the most difficult things is to go on stage and get rid of the guy in your head that is your editor. And
gotcha.
I'm not like,
yeah,
please don't call an ambulance on me. I'm not. Yeah. But yeah, you know, because what you're doing is, you know, that ego part of your playing is in motion, and a lot of times it's very difficult to shut that guy off. And when he's off is really when you're playing, and you're really in the moment, and you're not being affected by things around you. So a lot of times, I guess, you know, when you're in a teaching moment or when you're in that zone, that's when some of your best playing comes out. And that's basically what he, whether wittingly or not, is what he was noticing. I guess it's much easier down the basement to not care about what you play. And then, ironically, you play some really cool stuff.
So interesting.
And the whole art is to try to bring that, you know, and this is a Kenny Werner thing, a great piano player. So I'm not doing anything that I've discovered. You know, I've just read books, and I'm interested in what people think about things. And he had a great way of saying, if you can't get on stage in front of 20,000 people and play the same way you play in front of 20 people that you don't care about, then he's very severe about it. He almost says, then you're playing music for the wrong reason.
Ooh.
And it doesn't take a genius to figure that out, but I get it. He's not saying to not care about people. He's basically saying, get over your ego and get over yourself and get up there and play. Play like you would if no one was there. And it's beautiful. Extremely difficult to do.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely
see,
difficult. And the master, the guys that we love have that. You know,
yeah,
the Miles Davis, and they had that vibe. It's almost like a could care less vibe, and but it's not meant to be like arrogant or interpreted as you know, aloof or superior. It's having, you know, loving what you do and loving the moment and letting it come about.
Well, you have to have.
Here we go. Now we're Twilight Zone music.
But I get that, Carl, and I'm not a musician. But you have to have some introspection when you're up on stage, because you can't be external all the time, or else you'll lose your grasp of your instrument. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Right, but it once again, that's it, I find it, you know, difficult. Only in my better moments am I at that spot. So, yeah, it's cool, but that becomes your quest. And in a way, that's really what it's about. There you go. We just transcended everything about who cares, number one. All that stuff goes away, or whatever number you are in the charts, or how much money you're making, or any other thing that you're trying to get out of it. And it becomes, to the people, once again, that I love, it really, truly does become spiritual, like John Coltrane. And I'd like to, I'm hoping that music, or even my music, you know, goes further and further in that direction, because that is really what I'm aspiring to do. At least I think that's what I'm trying to do.
You raise a good point about John Coltrane, because you realize how much fussing and fighting there was about the changes that he created within his group. I mean, McCoy Tyner left him because McCoy could not stand the direction that Coltrane found himself veering into. You have to be courageous to follow your muse. There are lots of artists that you and I know who are stuck, and they don't realize necessarily how negative they're being about their music, but they don't realize how stuck they allow themselves to be. You are a very creative person. You want to, and you will not stand for anyone who will not allow you to be who you are. You must. This is what you've been doing all your life. So you've got the freedom going back and forth with Greg and with Lafayette Gilchrist and whoever else invites you to come aboard to do your thing elsewhere. But this is you. This music is just, oh, my God. You do have the power of a John Coltrane. I'm going to say it.
And I'm going to disagree. But I'll thank you just the same. So
no,
speaking
I,
about artists. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking about it now as I said it, because in a different sphere, you speak to another kind of generation, and you have mesmerized audiences and made them aspire to the greatness within themselves. We've had discussions about you in Baltimore, you know.
No, I actually am not aware of that.
Yeah.
And now you can see I'm trying to change the channel here.
I know. You can't take it. You can't take it. That's okay. And I understand, because you're a humble guy and you're the perennial student. So, you know, you're always
going
to be that way.
It gets a little awkward, like trying to, you know, look at yourself in this other entity that other people may look at you at. It gets kind of like, I'd rather talk about Robert McClintock's art. You know, I'd rather talk about someone else. I'm sure you understand. I am fascinated by it and grateful for it, and it's kind of really cool. But, yeah, I'm confessing to some slight awkwardness, you know. There we go.
Well, that's the beauty of you.
But cool.
Now,
and then maybe, yeah, I should just let it go and go, cool, I'm glad that you talk about me. That's awesome. And that's what I should have said first.
That's okay. This is part of your unique and sometimes quirky artistry.
Boy, that's just getting to be. I'm starting to notice that in everybody that I love, and also in myself. That, yeah, dude, like it's almost like, why do we have to be a little like nutty, you know? And I even recognize it in myself that I'm going, I'm a trip. So anyway. Robert McClintock, I want to make sure I mention him, because
yes,
I love the
did.
Artwork, and I love
oh
what he's
God,
about, and for anybody that's not aware of him, he does this cool digital photography that he paints over, and
beautiful.
I love the way my record looks, and thank you, Robert, you're the best. And actually, he has I guess it would be like a painting or something, he does a lot of, he did one of Lafayette Gilchrist and stuff, and it's me at the cat's eye that's in his gallery, which is really cool. And I have one hanging up in my room, and it's awesome. So what a perfect CD cover. And so
wonderful.
I'm honored by that.
Yeah, and I posted the front on my Facebook page, and people have been commenting to me. Even people have made it a point to call me to say, whoa, that is some classy shot. It's beautiful. It's just stunning work. It is.
Yeah, I like what he does. It's great. And I didn't want to forget, you know, Jeffrey Himes, how much he helped out and with the liner notes, because I think you only really get that stuff if you have the CD, the hard copy. I'm not sure if you get that if you digitally download the record or not. I don't know, obviously, because I don't have it. You know what I mean? I have my own record.
You don't. You have
but,
to get the hard
yeah,
copy
really
because,
nice. I
yeah.
love Jeffrey and what he's done, you know, and he's from Baltimore as well. So much cool stuff is right in your backyard. I've said this many times.
Whew,
Paul
you
Reed
are
Smith,
not lying.
Who's helped me with guitars, you know, and all the great guys that I mentioned earlier, you know, from Lafayette Gilchrist to Greg Tompkins. And, man, I'm really I'm not in his band, but I've done a couple gigs with him. And thank you to Rodney Kelly for asking me to hang with his band and play. And I love Rodney, and he's got a nice thing going on, and I can't wait to hear what he finally puts out there, because we've been waiting on him now for a long time to do something with his music, you know, putting out a CD or something online, whatever. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, wait a minute. Doesn't he have a CD out now? I thought he did.
I don't know.
Okay.
If he has something, I'm not sure if it would be an official release, or if he's in the middle of doing it, or if he does have one out, then that means I'm a little behind on it. So please don't listen to this information, you know, that I just said. I don't want to misinform anyone. Press the erase button. Press the play.
Rewind.
Rewind.
Well,
I don't want to get Rodney in trouble. Gracie's going to be going, what do you mean? I do have something out. What are you trying to do, man?
Oh, you know. He is going to be answering you by 5 o'clock today. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? He's probably, if I was in front of a computer now, he's going, what are you talking about?
Yeah, right. Well, listen, we're going to hear another track, but I wanted you to be aware of something if you weren't. My son's dad, my ex, that we remain good friends, Tim Flaherty, he is going to be part of this huge event that's going to be happening in Parkville. It's called Standstock. Are you aware of that?
I've had people tell me about it. Sounds like a bunch of the old guys from my old days. You're talking about 30 years ago, from before I kind of did my own music, when I played in cover bands years ago. And it sounds like a whole bunch of those people getting together.
Yes, I have
heard of it. And what does he have to do with it?
Tim is a singer and a guitar player, and used to be in groups called Cherokee Pepper and Cupcake back in the day.
What year was that? Was that back in the 60s and 70s?
Yes, that's around the same time you
really?
Were playing. And your paths crossed, but he's going to definitely be playing that day. It's on a Saturday in a little strip place right down the street from Parkville High School. So we'll have to take pictures.
That's cool. I'm sure I will all know half the people there. Yeah,
absolutely.
Although I must say, I have, you know, I kind of, you know, went another direction from that, you know. I think I started out in the 80s, you know, after literally doing 6,000 nights of that, you know, I kind of had enough.
Well, I understand, yeah.
Yeah, it was just enough, although what a time. You know,
what a different
time.
Yeah, and you were working all the time, and it's because you were working all the time.
Six nights a week. Six nights a week.
Oh, my God.
From the time I think I was like 19 till I was 38. I did, what's that, about 20 years. Six nights a week, man. That was
really?
I tell you, that was a grind. Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
God blessed me and gave me another chance. I was like 37 or 38 years old when I put out my first album.
Yeah, Electric Thoughts, right?
So I've really been given this second chance, so to speak. You know, if I really would have thought about it in any kind of intelligent way, I probably would have never even thought there was a shot at doing anything in music.
Oh, contraire mon petit.
Yeah, because
of
your age, and because you really, you know, I didn't invest time in that world because you were in another one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Another very interesting moment for me. One of those, you know, kind of, you know, let go kind of moments.
Well, and
I'm glad I did it. And,
yeah, me too.
Thanks.
And so many others. And then in 2007 was the intro to the Jimmy Jazz Band, and that's I Got Your Mantra, which we're just about to hear right now.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
I'm ready.
And I'm glad you are, because I think the chat room is ready, too. This is Carl Filipiak and the Jimmy Jazz Band, I Got Your Mantra, from Live at the Cat's Eye. Here we go.
Thank you. mantra. I got your mantra.
You sure enough do.
Hey, glad I have a record label that lets me do that stuff. Thanks to Art of Life Records and Paul Kohler. Glad I got that comment out there.
Yeah,
great label.
Me too.
Are you interested in some great jazz and stuff? He has Ted Green and Lenny Bro, and McLaughlin has a record on there. Holdsworth, some great stuff for anybody that's looking for a new place for some great jazz. Art of Life Records.
That's an awesome promotion.
Thanks for letting me say that.
Apps. Oh, are you kidding? You can say anything you want to. I have to tell you this. We honest to goodness, got a hell yeah in the chat room. So I think that pretty much sums that up.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Good.
Carl,
glad to hear it.
It has been such a blast. Now, look, did that seem like 10 minutes just went by? 10 minutes. I mean, we've been on the air for like over an hour. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's it. We're ready for Greg.
Yeah, and he's here. He's here.
Cool.
Shall I introduce him?
Absolutely.
It's so cool to have two teachers on the honker with me. And this man, as you said before, Carl, is one of the greater saxophonists that we know. Just a wonderful mentor and an absolute advocate for jazz education. Ladies and gentlemen, please make welcome Gregory Tompkins.
Hey, Trish.
How are you?
Hey, Carl. How you doing? I'm good.
Good, Greg. Great to hear you, brother. Good to hear you, man.
This is awesome.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Great interview.
Oh,
glad you
were
listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening the whole time.
Well, you know, Greg, Carl, this is why he's so fantastic, because he just takes the torch and runs with it.
Well, see, Greg's the guy that's going to make him uncomfortable. How he doesn't know how much responsibility he has for my current contentment in life. He got me out of the house. He doesn't even probably know it. He got me out of the house. Got me playing with his band. Got me playing with Lafayette. And so now I get to say it to him on the air. Man, thank you. It's been the best couple years of my life lately. Because of you. So thank you very much.
Well,
musically,
really
definitely.
It.
Yeah, it's been awesome. So, yeah, man. Greg is the guy. I love Greg.
Yeah, and
Trish,
you too.
Trish, I don't know if you know about the first night that Carl played with Lafayette's band down at the 8x10. Well, basically, Lafayette had said something to me a few days before. Hey, Carl's going to play this gig with us, right? And I'm like, yeah, because Lafayette's band is not the easiest band to play with. I don't care what kind of musician you are. I don't care if you're the best cat in the world, and we've had some of them play with us. You can't just walk into that band, you know?
Right.
It just won't work. So, you know, I'm just sitting here going, like, what in the world are we going to do now? Because we've never had a guitar player, really, in the band, you know? And so I'm walking on stage. Here's Carl with his guitar playing one of the parts, and he goes, hey, Greg, that's the line, isn't it? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's playing part of the melody. I have no clue what he's playing. It took me a whole minute to sit there and go, oh, yeah, that's the right line, you know? And let me tell you, Carl came up and devastated that night.
Really?
Just completely. No, he tore it down. That, you can't just be a person that knows what scale goes over what chord and plays in Lafayette's band. And you've heard the band, so you know what it sounds like, you know?
Oh, my God,
and,
yeah.
You really have to not only be a good musician, but you have to have some pretty serious instincts about how to deal with a situation that you just don't know what's going to go on. And that's kind of how most of our gigs are. None of us knows what's going to go on, you know?
Hey, Greg, I knew that when you said to me, hey, Carl, whatever you know about jazz, it doesn't work anymore here. As soon as you said that, I'm going, cool, this is a gig I love. And I also knew that, guess what, Greg was not lying. And that's an awesome gig. And once again, thank you for getting that happening. That was awesome.
That is incredible.
It's been beautiful. I think, what have we been playing together steadily in the different bands? About 3 years now, at least?
Yeah, I think about 3 years now. Yeah.
That is so cool. Oh, my God. And especially
great.
Here you are, Carl, going into a situation where, you know, you essentially have the love child of Ellington and Monk in the way of Lafayette Gilchrist. And I, you know, here is
absolutely.
Carl Lafayette. Woo!
Absolutely. I think he is that. I do. I think he's one of the most creative guys around. I can't speak highly enough of Lafayette. Man, he's up there.
Yeah.
He's
very
something
prolific.
Different.
Yeah.
Man, he's the best, man. He's fantastic.
Well, you know what? And we won't be, because I know I'm very aware that we're going to talk about Baltimore jazz education in this amazing project. But honest to gosh, when you see Lafayette Gilchrist and the New Volcanoes on stage, you don't know what has hit you because you don't know exactly what to expect. Things are spontaneous and they're passionate. It's like musical poetry on stage. It's like a cool ballet. Oh, my God. God, I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Cool. Now, I'm going to be spontaneous now and let you guys talk and give Greg his time. And as much as I'd love to stay, my heart it would be in staying, but I'm going to be a gentleman and let Greg talk about all the great things he's doing. And, Trish, it's been awesome. And
awesome.
Can't wait to do it again. And thank you for everything. I know you can feel it through the phone. Okay, love you guys. Greg, I'll see you on
too.
The next gig, okay?
All right, Carl,
all right,
be giving
all right,
you a call.
Guys, you take care.
Okay, all right, Carl,
soon.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
God bless.
Thank you. Bye, Trish.
Bye-bye. Oh, Greg, he is something else. I am so glad that he was just hanging out so that we could have a chance for you all to be together. That's just so cool. God, you really
are. Yeah, it's always special hanging out.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, maybe you can sort of decipher what I'm saying here as far as you are concerned, but, you know, the last time that you were on the show, we're going back now over a year, well over a year, so it just seems like even though people are talking about the economy and that kind of negative talk, I want to stop in its tracks now. But things were iffy back then, and they still are to a certain degree as far as music is concerned, different kinds of genres in town. But, Greg, honestly, don't you feel that there has been some real positive changes and we're going in a good direction? Do you feel that?
Well, I certainly do. And the thing is, if anybody's any type of history student, you just read a history book. You know, there was a time where nobody could buy a house. There weren't banks to give loans to people. You see what I'm saying? You know, we lost 500,000 people in the Civil War. You know, brother killing brother. We got issues, but we don't have those type of issues, you know. And it's really about how you think about things to me. Just staying positive, you know, because there have been things that have been just so much worse that people have just lived through. And, you know, I mean, you just had Carl on the show for an hour. And the thing is, if you can keep it on the bright side, then you can take advantage of the opportunities. And there are opportunities.
Definitely. Oh, my gosh. And this is why you are, so necessary for our community. You have been involved with this Baltimore Jazz Education Project. You really do make hair stand up on end in the best way. This is so necessary at this moment in time, and I know that you're going to wax poetically about this. Go ahead. I'm so proud of you. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole thing, I basically grew up in the Baltimore area. Went to university, got a jazz degree at Towson University, got out, started playing gigs locally, eventually started teaching. And, you know, I've just always really been into it more from the musical standpoint. You know, I mean, I want to play with the best musicians, play the best music, and, you know, help my students out the best that I could. And when you're doing these type of things, you don't always realize that, you know, there are people really watching you. They're watching. And I'm not saying in a bad sense. sometimes in a good sense. And that's how this whole Baltimore Jazz Education Project got started. Greg and Sally Poling are the leaders of our foundation. They're the founders. And Greg has been taking lessons with me for about 10 years. And he's a, he's a corporate guy. He runs W.R. Grace. He's the president. It's a large corporation. And, you know, so he's coming into lessons, you know, for years, and he's seeing how I'm working with the students. And he gets the idea to put this thing together. You see what I'm saying? And then he asked me to do it. You know, and it's not a, about a thing of, you know, just talking about myself or me. It's really trying to help these students get involved in music and, you know, learn all the good aspects out of music, you know, how to really play it, how to just socialize, meet other people. Right now I'm sitting in the teaching studio at Music and Arts in Ellicott City. This is where I teach 4 days a week. And at this store, we have people from all walks of life. I've got students from Africa, China, Korea, South America, of course, Americans, you know, and music has taught me that, how to relate. You know, you get on the bandstand with people, you might not even be able to speak the same language or, you know, you might have to really work the music out right then and there. So don't have time for arguing and fighting. You have to try and produce the most harmonious sound that you can make. And you get a chance to meet all sorts of people. And to me, that's what this whole thing has really brought about. You meet people, and they have ideas, and you have ideas, and maybe you can put them together. So the Baltimore Jazz Education Project, we've been together for over 7 years now, and we've helped out probably over 40 students through the different schools that we've taught at and different private students that I usually take about two a year, and they take lessons for free. The Baltimore Jazz Education Project pays for it. We hire students from Towson University to teach at Patterson Public Charter School, and we've been there for 3 years, you know, and we fundraise, and, you know, and this 6 years, I think we've raised maybe a little over $115,000, and we're a small outfit. We're really small. It's Greg, Poling, Sally, his wife, myself, and then the students that we hire house, and maybe one or two of them a year. So we're not really any larger than at the six people. We have Mike Jones, who helps do the posters with us, and Pam Hendricks is a friend of ours, and she brings some food for the fundraiser and everything. So it's been great, you know. I mean,
I love it.
Can't ask for any more, you know.
Well, it's the fact that you're doing it, that you're involved with it, and I guess I'm going to speak for you and you'll say differently, but it just seems like the more that you get involved with an endeavor like this, the more excited you become, because you see these students blossom. And how much of a natural high is that?
Oh, it's the best. I mean, as you know, you were just talking to Carl, it takes a long time to really learn this music. And you never really learn all of it, you know. You can't, no matter how old you get, there's still more to learn. But there's no more convincing fact than when you see somebody that's actually come along, studied with you for a while, and then they go out and play their own gigs. Or, for example, Chris Young, who's at Towson University now, and he's now in his third year. He was with the Baltimore Jazz Education Project. We paid for his lessons for 3 years, and he has a full tuition waiver to go to Towson University to study the saxophone.
Oh, that's great.
That came through the Baltimore Jazz Education Project. It came through myself and everybody else that's helped along, you know, including, you know, you and your people helping us promote to do these type of things, you know. So it takes a lot. It really really takes a lot. You know, people can come to a show and really enjoy it, but they may not know all the backstory of all the going back and forth and sitting in the room, you know, lessons and making sure that people are getting paid and looking at the calendar and all of that, you know. But, you know, to me, when you see someone really accomplishing it, there's nothing better. So, and I also have to let you know, we've got two young ladies playing on the program this year.
Awesome.
We have a young lady by name Morgan, who just started with me. And then, let me see, Milan, who played in the middle school band last year. She'll be doing a solo. And then, of course, we have a great soloist, our guest, Claire Daly, this year from New York.
That is incredible. I am so glad she's taken the time. People are going to be blown away because, you know what, I got to know Claire a little bit through Janice Rochelle Littlejohn and what she has done through But Can She Play, the documentary that needs to get out there. But Claire, in case anybody doesn't know, you don't necessarily expect to see a woman come on stage with a baritone sax. I love it. She's awesome.
And it's it's for real, you know. I mean, she's one of the best in the world at what she does.
Many
jazz critics say that, not just a few. And I mean, she's been winning polls for years. You
know, isn't that something?
Wonderful person. Great player. She came down and played with us this summer when we played the 125th anniversary of Druid Park. And she
That circumstances. I didn't know that there was an anniversary involved, and of course I missed that. I'm so sorry. How was that? Was it a great turnout?
It was really nice, really nice turnout. Everybody was very pleased with it. Everybody loved Claire. The band played well, you know. It was one of the few gigs that you do where literally everything goes right. No worries.
Oh, that's so cool to hear that. And look, we have to make mention, because you just mentioned two young ladies were involved in this particular event. We're going to get specific about the dates and such, or the date. But we have to make mention that at the Thelonious Monk competition this year for saxophonists, a young lady named Melissa Aldana won. So congratulations to her. This is just and that's part of what I alluded to, Greg, when I said to you, do you feel like things are changing? The musical world, jazz, et cetera, seems to have a third leg now. This is my perception. And you mentioned the Baltimore Jazz Education Project in terms of, you know, what everybody can do to make sure that others are aware of it. I was just thinking, we need to be talking about this, not just during this time of year, but all throughout the year, to make people reaware of what's happening with this project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, when you go from something like this that is, we're really about the educational part, and we're really about the music, you know. So it's not a, I wouldn't even cast any aspersions on a beauty contest or anything like that, but it's not just get up and show who you are type of thing. This is pretty serious, you know, because people can come through our program and walk out with a pretty hefty scholarship.
Oh, I'll say. Phew.
You know,
and
college is expensive, you know, and, you know, we want to be about helping people get to where they want to be. You know, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I come from a wonderful family. When I was going to Towson University, before I went to Towson, my dad gave me a check for all 4 years.
What?
He had the money saved up. Now, he not only did that with me, he did that with my brother and sister. You cannot do that today. I mean, unless you're really well off. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I really
do.
You
know?
Oh,
and if we can help people get to where they want to be, I think that would be a wonderful thing, you know, just so that young people don't come through this whole experience getting out just, you know, loaded with debt, you know, ruining their credit and all of that. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. And, I mean, I've been very fortunate to be in a town like Baltimore where there's just, you know, there's so many geniuses walking around. You know, you know, many people wouldn't think that about Baltimore, but hey, you know, anytime you can spend some time with Ron Deal, Whit Williams, Carl Filipiak, Lafayette Gilchrist, Dennis Chambers, I could go on, Gary Thomas, you know, Michael Formanac, Tim Murphy, Dave Ballou, Jim McFaul, these people are right here.
Yeah.
A lot of them, they're right on my cell phone. I can call them up anytime.
Oh, shoot. That's the truth. Baltimore is, you know, coming from Philly, that was one scenario, and I didn't necessarily have a full appreciation of Philadelphia and the jazz in that town. And then I come to Baltimore, and it's a whole new story. It's just this. We've talked about this before, Gregory. This corridor is absolutely full of jazz millionaires. Not money, but talent. Oh, just staggering. I'm so tickled. When is the event going to take place? Sometime in October. What's the date?
Absolutely. The date is Saturday, October 5th. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Let me give out the website, which is www.jazzbjep.com. We just got a website. www.jazzbjep.com. The show will be at Towson University in the Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Building, or the Center for the Arts, that's what they're calling it now. It used to be the Fine Arts Building way back in the day when I was there. But we're also doing the day before, on Friday, a clinic featuring Claire Daly from 2 to 3:30 in the Center for the Arts in the Recital Hall. So feel free to come.
That's awesome. I didn't know about that. Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so that's something.
Yeah.
That's something else that we're putting out there. So anybody can go to the website and find out the information about both events. They're free. The Saturday night is a fundraiser, so we're taking donations. You know, that helps us keep going and everything.
Of course.
You know, we're really grateful to Towson University and Jim McFalls and Dave Ballou for what they've done for the program, because this is our sixth one at Towson University.
Time has absolutely flown in that regard. Oh, geez, I didn't know
absolutely.
It was 6 years already. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have to say, it is a beautiful place to hold this event, because when you get to the Towson State University campus, it's so wonderful. My son is mulling over possibilities of him continuing his education from CCBC to Towson State.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful campus, a city within a city. So pretty much you can walk anywhere you choose, and the grounds are just lovely. I love Towson State. My God.
Yeah, the university's not only grown, but it's really improved in so many ways, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like far to come before, but, you know, Towson's incredible. That's the first school in the state of Maryland to actually have a jazz degree program.
Woo! I love that. That is
jazz
so
degree.
Awesome.
And that's been like about 30 years since they instituted it, you know? So... you know, now, not only Towson, you have Peabody School of Music, University of Maryland, UMBC, I think Salisbury now has a jazz minor or something.
I think so.
So.
That's I'm so happy. And once again, it kind of refuels my thinking that things are changing, even though we don't necessarily have the climate to be able to comprehend that good news is happening right in front of us. Indeed, good news is happening. So do you foresee a time, Greg, that maybe we can do some of these Baltimore Jazz education projects more than once a year? Are there any ideas being tossed about how we can keep this front and center in people's minds?
We have talked about doing a second event. We just haven't gotten to it yet because, unbelievably, just to do the one, I've got to book the concert hall almost a year in advance.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, this is part of the backstory, you know what I'm saying? So just to do the one event, we've got to do that. And then we've got three different bands playing. So, you know, that's a lot of musicians. All of those have to be checked with, hey, do you think you can do the date, you know? And you got to keep checking with them through the year. There's paperwork that has to be done. You know, we do some underwriting on some shows. The draft, just for the poster, three drafts just to do the poster.
Whoa.
Every single time, you know? So financial forms have to be submitted, you know? So that stuff really comes down to myself, Greg, and Sally Poling. So, you know, and, you know, the Towson Concert Hall is pretty big, so we try and get as many people in there as possible. So that takes a lot of effort. So yours is the second radio interview that I've done. I've got another one to do. You know, so it's just a lot of stuff, you know. So that's the only reason why we haven't gotten to a second one. And, I mean, a lot of musicians really love to play, but not a lot like to sit down and do the grunt work. You see what I'm saying? All the stuff that it's unglamorous. I don't mind doing it because, in the end, I want the show to be successful. You know, I want
sure.
the players to get up there and have a, you know, play wonderfully. That means we need to have a great venue. We need to have good sound. Keith Larson's running sound for us this year. You know, I mean, and we've had Brent Mingle over the last couple of years, and he did a wonderful job also. You know, so there's so many little components just to get the one thing to happen, you know?
Okay, go ahead, because I'm all excited now. I just thought of something. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So we have talked about other events, you know, so I think – however we do it, I don't know if it would be something a little smaller. And people have offered, you know. So I just think, you know, time. You just have to have time to do it, you know. It takes quite a bit of time just to get everything, you know, tuned exactly right, just like having the band tuned.
Well, here's an idea. I just went to www.jazzbjep.com, and
mm-hmm.
I love that logo because it's nice and simple, and it's bright, and it catches your interest. So here's something for you to ponder. It doesn't maybe necessarily have to be an event like what's coming up in October, the clinic and then the show. Why don't you have presence? Why don't you get a hold of Cliff Hunt at the Capitol Jazz and Soul Fest and make sure that you have a booth out there in the summer in Columbia, because it's not just a D.C. thing, it's also a Baltimore thing. Why don't you have a presence at other kinds of functions where it makes sense, where you can have a booth and volunteers can come and explain what you do, so a lot more people go, oh, count me in. You know, even a list.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you have to be involved with other people, because people just come up with ideas that you just never think about, or opportunities. And that's what I was saying earlier. It's about opportunities and taking advantage of opportunities. And I will certainly be talking to you about this a little bit more. Of course, privately.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I would love to, because this – look, Greg, here's the bottom line. We really, all of us, have to start thinking very simply about things. And I got this bug in my ear coming through my throat now because I was looking at different people's Facebook pages. And as much as artists want to get their careers off the ground and get more people involved in what they're doing, translating into more money for everybody, people don't understand that you have to get basic. You go to a Facebook page, and the first thing that you should see on somebody's artist profile is where their website is or where people can get access to their music, because we're all ADD. We don't want to search. You have to have it right in front of me. So going back to Baltimore Jazz Education Project, people have a tendency to forget unless it's in front of their face all the time. So if they keep seeing the logo, that red and white and black, beautiful, simple logo, they're going to go, oh, Baltimore Jazz Education Project is here. I was telling you about this last week. Let's go see what they're doing. And it goes on and on and on. And by the time next year rolls around, you've got twice as much money in your coffers.
Wow. All right. You're going to take a good look at that.
Yeah, it's just it's just a way of not feeling so defeated because you've got this one event and then you have to scurry to make sure everybody's aware of it. And meanwhile, you know, here's October rolling around, people are starting to get into that nesting holiday mode. So
absolutely.
So, yeah, we'll talk about it because there's lots to talk about. And then the other thing is that when you keep insisting on this kind of project, people get the inspiration to do their other projects as far as jazz education. And wouldn't that be mm-hmm. great to have a domino effect, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's, this thing like having Claire come down, that was actually – going to be something else. Her friends, Ben Frederick and Claire's friend, I can't remember her name right now, they wanted her to come down and do this concert at Druid Hill Park and wanted the Jazz Explosion Band to be part of it. But they weren't sure that it was going to work out. Well, anyway, I went to Greg Poling and said, hey, you know what? Claire Daly might come down. We might want to feature her, you know? But we weren't thinking about doing it for the fundraiser concert. And it took a while for the Druid Hill Park thing to work out. So we moved the event with Claire to having her be our guest artist on the concert, also doing the clinic, you know? So that's things kind of start, you know, you do one yeah. event and you think about the other, something else comes along and you start working on it, you know? So yeah, I would be very interested in talking to you and, about some ideas.
Good. It's just really necessary at this point. And, forget about the idea that jazz education is something that is a superfluous endeavor. Now it's more urgent than ever. Every child should have an instrument in their hand if they want to have one. So that's my goal.
There you go. Absolutely.
Oh, well, I'm so glad. You know I'm about to play Lafayette Gilchrist and Towards the Shining Path. So, and that features you, sir. So I'm just tickled that you had the time to spend with us today.
Yeah, for having me on. And, you know, I hope you and T can come out to the show or come out to the clinic. It'd be awesome seeing you.
Oh, look, it would be a real nice opportunity to meet Claire. She's been on the show, too. And T really enjoys what he sees whenever he is part of this jazz education project. Going to Towson State's one thing. Seeing it in that particular hall, it's splendid. That's a big word that hardly ever gets used, but it's splendid. So thank you for your efforts, Greg.
All right, Trish. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Please do. Okay, we'll talk more about the brainstorming.
Sounds good. All right.
All right.
Enjoy your day.
You
Bye.
Too. Thank you. It's beautiful. Bye-bye. Gregory Tompkins. Yes. So nice that there are those courageous and equally as important as courageous folks who are determined to make it work as far as kids and jazz and how to pull it together, who to speak to, how to get it done, not take a no for an answer. So I can't tell you how grateful that so many of us are for Gregory Tompkins. Lafayette Gilchrist. This is going back to 2005, featuring Greg on saxophone. Towards the Shining Path. Do enjoy this on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Jazz.
Right. Thank you. Fate, yeah, it has right before my eyes. I never thought I'd feel this way again. Now that we started to be friends, yeah, I never knew this kind of love was meant for me. But now you're here with me.
That song too, Never Say Never, In the Midst of Love. Matter of fact, she closes out the CD with that song. And I'll bet you that Mr. Williams, a.k.a. Mr. Matt Williams, gets a smile on his face every time he hears that song, because having known Debbie Poole since we landed in Baltimore 2004, woo, third time around, getting to know Debbie at the brunches where we were regulars every Sunday at the Marriott downtown in Baltimore. Just got to know Debbie in gradations. And one of the things that is very notable about Debbie Poole was that she had been alone for a while and didn't ever necessarily think that she was going to find herself in a place where a good friend was going to become a whole lot more than that. She was doing a good deed when she decided to make sure that Matt was okay. Matt was going through his own problems. They were really good family friends, and then they became something a whole lot more, and they just got married a month or so ago. Yay! Love that story. Debbie Poole is going to be at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum tomorrow night. That's Friday the 20th, by the way, from 5 to 8. She's going to be there with the group Spice. Know all the guys in Spice? Reginald F. Lewis Museum. To get there, you first of all go to rflewis, L-E-W-I-S, museum.org. It's at East 30 East Pratt Street in Baltimore. An absolutely beautiful place. And Joy Hall is the host. Yay! My former pal, well, always be my pal, but my former, what shall I say? She is the creator and the person who had put together Cool Jazz Conversations. I was on that show for over 2 years, and now she's doing it with Annie. And she is working also at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. She has a really nice job there. So she's going to be fulfilling a couple of missions tomorrow night. She knows Debbie and the gang real well, too. So it's going to be like old home week. We heard Woody Shaw, the second song in that set, The Time Is Right. Oh, indeed it is. Ain't it? Virtuoso on that trumpet. We just talked about Matt Williams. Also a trumpet player, so I'm sorry he missed Woody Shaw today. Whew, photographic memory and perfect pitch. It's pretty tough to conceive of that, isn't it? 1983 was the particular year for this beautiful work. Woody, not only on trumpet, but he also was very well-versed in flugelhorn, cornet. He's a composer, a band leader. That particular project had Steve Turay on trombone, the late, great Mulgrew Miller, also Stafford James, and Tony Redis on drums. And interesting to note about Woody Shaw, he was one of those beautiful people who started off very early, didn't really want to do the trumpet, but was talked into it, honestly. So it's interesting to note that he picked up the trumpet the same month and year as the date of Brown's death in June of 1956. So it's as though the torch was passed. Interesting to note that. Woody Shaw, one of the greats, influenced a great deal of people, too. It's beautiful to hear him. Can't hear him enough, actually. We heard, too, Lafayette Gilchrist. Someone once said of Lafayette that he is the quintessential post-bop experimentation guy. You heard Carl Filippiak and Gregory Tompkins talk about Lafayette. Honestly, just amazing on piano, very, very precise at times, very experimental at others. He is this gentle sort of leader on stage, not sort of, he is a leader, but when you actually see him, it's as though you're seeing a star. He's so amazing on the keyboard, and he's actually able to communicate in certain ways to people in the band. Carl Filippiak and Lafayette together are amazing. How this happened, we don't know. We just thank God that it did. Beautiful. That was Towards the Shining Path from 2005. Anything you pick up, you can be assured that you're going to hear some hard drive and stuff. It's great. Eric Essex, he's got a gig tonight, Birmingham, Alabama. if you are in the Alabama area where you can get to the Alice Stevens Center, it's a beautiful venue to go. Just an amazing hall like the one that Greg was talking about regarding Towson State. There is going to be a very special show, Five Men on a Stool, plus Tracy Hamlin. We'll talk more about that, but I wanted you to get a gathering on Evolution, the name of the new CD. It is quite a musical endeavor. This particular song, Foot Soldiers, getting a lot of attention in all the best ways. Eric wanted to contribute to the healing of Birmingham 50 years after the 1963 civil rights scenario that was taking breath away in more ways than one. He has done an awesome job of doing his share of healing. Eric Essex on guitar and company on Hybrid Jazz. This is Hybrid Jazz. By the opal pool,
both of us safe at home. And everyone safe at home. And both of us safe at home. And all of us safe.
That beautiful? Mm. The man who celebrated his 69th birthday yesterday, Michael Franks. Just hard to believe for those of us who have been following his career. Let me tell you something. That's from Blue Pacific from 1990, which, let's count, 23 years ago. His 11th studio album, A Return to Reprise Records. Tommy LaPuma was producer, and are you ready for who else was on this particular project? Whew! Jeff Lorber, John Patitucci, Larry Carlton, Joe Sample, Kirk Whalum, and Steely Dan's Walter Becker doing some engineering on it. So you know why people are saying, oh, that was one of the best albums that Michael Franks ever did. That was before our Veronica Nunn, by the way. And by the way, Veronica is coming back in time for her October birthday. We're going to be talking about Bullying Awareness Day. And also, let me just throw this in, all right? Just booked is Mark Arthur Miller. Now, I played a track the other day and apparently created some kind of stir when I did. I noticed that all the grown women that were in my chat room were in varying stages of disarray. That's all I'm going to say. So this is how cool Mark is. We communicated the past couple of days. We agreed to a date, October the 10th, I believe that is. So that's when he'll be here, 6 days before my birthday. A little gift. So he wanted to make sure that our friend BJ White knew that he was attempting to friend her, and he had some trouble. So, Beach, if you would friend Mark Arthur Miller, I don't think that you'll mind doing that anyway. All right, now, back to the programming. Michael Franks, let me tell you that he's going to be at the Santa Fe Star. Is that a new club in Las Vegas? Coming up in October. Also, B.B. King's in New York on the 12th. Awesome. So we will probably talk about Michael Franks when Veronica Nunn visits us again, but we're going to focus really strongly on how we can combat bullying in schools, which is a big deal. And by the way, also on Blue Pacific, oh my God, this album is so beautiful, Livingston Taylor and Brenda Russell doing background vocals. Just gorgeous. Sine Qua Non, the group based out of D.C., formed by Michael Bowie on bass. Woo! We had Michael on the show, too. Victor Provost, Mark Prince, Lyle Link, and Akendra Das are the folks who make up Sine Qua Non at this moment in time. A very big deal happening today, tomorrow, and the next day. Trans Soul, mixing classical, jazz, and world rhythms with a multimedia event at the Atlas Theater in Washington, D.C. Now, Michael and company were given a D.C. Arts Commission, a grant. D.C. Arts Commission gave them a grant, rather. So things are happening really quickly with this group. And this is what Michael wants to do because this is how he figures there's going to be world peace. And he is not kidding. We get together and we figure out ways we can communicate through music, taking these varying genres and making sure that people know how to express themselves. The more kinds of trans soul experiences we can have, the better the world's going to be. There, Michael. I hope I did you proud. Honestly, he has got such a beautiful, spiritual, and joyful mind. It's just a pleasure to know him. Eric Essex, one of those other individuals, foot soldiers from Evolution. Tonight, it's going to be five men on a stool, and it will also feature Tracy Hamlin. And I want to make sure you know who the five men are, or the men associated with this project tonight at the Alice Stevens Center, ALYSSTEPHENS.org in Birmingham, Alabama. PJ Spraggins, Sean Michael Ray, Kelly O'Neill, Joseph Stallworth, and Kelvin Wooten. You do some research on producer extraordinaire Kelvin Wooten. Wait till you see who he has worked with. They're all going to be part and parcel of this beautiful project. And Tracy Hamlin is as naturally high as a kite because this is her band. This is her group of men to work with. She loves these Southern gentlemen. And, my God, if you ever have the chance to see them all together, please do. I'm zipping through music. You better believe it, because I promised some people they would get their tunes played, and they will. Maurice Johnson. Yes. Hello, My Brother is the name of the track. We love this track from Peace, Love, and Jazz. I want to tell you what Maurice is going to be doing in the next couple of days. So be forewarned, because knowing ahead of time what's going to happen makes things very much easier. Maurice, followed by another group that is actually a locally based group, and we're going to change programming around a little bit so we can get all of this in on Hybrid Jazz. Maurice on guitar.
in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weak. I could never live without your love. It's the kind of love I've been dreaming of. Every time I hear you speak my name, melts my heart. Just the thought of you now, I see your flames burning deep inside. There is no doubt. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. Every time you leave, you say part of me. I can't stand the pain. When you're gone, the sunshine fades away. What to do? I couldn't do it now. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love, it's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. It's all about loving. something in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weep. What to do, I couldn't do it now. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give me my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give me my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love.
George Hazeray, Johnny Cole, Mambo Hernandez, ladies and gentlemen, Marc Antoine.
Oh, Slim Man Live, that's what he is, that's what he does. And you should know that Faith in Us is the name of the song. And speaking of Marc Antoine, look, Mark had an idea for Slim, and now you need to know about it. We need more bona fide music. That band was the bomb. Woo! So good a few years ago. We need to have a new project. So Slim Man agreed to do a Kickstarter fund. Now, I see that slimman.com does not have information there, Griselda Medina. Could you do something about that and tell Slimmy for us? But you need to know that you can find out information on Facebook and go to Kickstarter.com and type in Slim Man or Marc Antoine. I'm assuming that you'll find it that way. I think there should be a suggestion for those who give over $1,000. That way you could be in the running for, check this out, Dinner with Marc and Slim in Paris. Just saying, wouldn't that be cool? Let's think out of the box. People have money. If they contribute over $1,000, they'll be in the running for the grand prize. Special. Not Nashville, Paris with Marc Antoine and Slim. Just think about that. All right. Now, we also had heard from Steve Cole, Going in Circles, Friends of Distinction song, by the way. They were hot in the later 60s, formed by Harry Elston and Floyd Butler. Now, check this out. These two were friends, and they were business partners, and they got this very successful group together, had quite a bit to do, by the way, with the Fifth Dimension. So they tried for Friends of Distinction, which was another group that was pretty similar. Had some hits, Grazing in the Grass, also Love or Let Me Be Lonely, and this one that you heard Steve Cole do on his brand new Pulse CD. Well, this is meant to tell you something about the world in which we live. Apparently in the 70s, the group broke up, or they broke up in enough time where it caused some real friction between Harry and Floyd. They didn't talk to each other for a while. They got back together in the way of friendship, and guess what? Floyd Butler had a heart attack and died in his friend Harry's arms, which goes to show you, if you have a challenge with someone, it needs to get worked out before a scenario happens that wouldn't maybe have a happy ending. Not saying a heart attack is a happy ending, but this gentleman died in his friend's arms, and they had already rectified their past grievances. I just saw that story this morning, and I had to pass it along to you. Whew. Maurice Johnson, Oklahoma-based, Peace, Love, and Jazz is his motto, and also the name of the CD. Hello, My Brother is the name of the song. Now, Maurice is going to be part of the Independent Artist Festival concert series happening on the 21st. Gary Fuston is going to be the host. Joanna Johnson, one of the participants in this lovely festival. If you go to independentartistfestival.com, you will learn more. Choose music and then venues, and you'll learn everything about it. It's going to be fabulous. I hope that my friend Griselda has a chance to go. We'll soon see. Let's get to two more pieces of music while we can. I promised Daryl Yokley we would get to Mount Fuji from The Void, something new for you on Hybrid Jazz. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Can't you see that the world is changing right before your eyes? Some people question the changes going on in their lives. They can't believe that the things we once held true were only lies. But they have no clue, no rhyme, and no reason. They don't know the answers why.
Bless your heart. Thanks for tuning in.